Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, how those fruit trees in your backyard are feeding the hungry in Tulare County. And Fresno County Superior Court reeling from state budget cuts, what impact it has on local residents. Plus, the Woodward Shakespeare Festival. But first, across the San Joaquin Valley, the commercial citrus harvest is almost complete. But over the past 2 months, volunteers in Tulare County have been working against the clock to bring a slice of the Valley's bounty to those who would otherwise go without. Valley Public's radio, Joe Moore, has this report.
On most Saturday mornings, Tulare Union High School student Conrad Santos would be doing what your average teenager usually does, which is to say, not a whole lot.
That's what I'd be doing right now, watching TV or playing video games.
But today, he's standing on a ladder inside a stranger's backyard, leaning deep into a giant orange tree, trying to reach for that elusive piece of fruit that otherwise might go to waste.
I would rather be out here doing something to help other people and donating the food to people who need it than just like laying at home and doing nothing.
He's actually one of around 10 volunteers taking part in a weekend community harvest sponsored by the group Be Healthy Tulare. Sarah Ramirez started the program a couple of months ago out of a desire to bring the issues of health and nutrition together with building a stronger community.
I feel like this type of project in a lot of ways helps fill some of the gaps, right? So we know we have an excess amount of food. We know we have people that are hungry. How do we put the two together?
Community harvest programs are popular across the state, such as Village Harvest in San Jose. But here in Tulare County, where so much of the state's fruit is grown, TC Harvest is the first program of its kind. And the potential here is huge. According to researchers at UC Riverside, around 60% of San Joaquin Valley homeowners have at least one citrus tree in their backyard. And quite often, a lot of that fruit goes to waste.
As you can see on the ground, I mean, that's pretty much what happens to it. It falls on the ground, it goes bad, and it gets wasted.
That's Sarah's husband, David Terrell, a teacher and football coach at Tulare Union. So far this year, the group has harvested over 12,000 pounds of fruit from backyard trees in Tulare and Visalia. Marty Zeeb is one of the homeowners taking part in the program.
These are two Valencias that they're going to be picking there. There's a tangerine and a navel that also needs to be picked.
He says that even after picking boxes and boxes of fruit for his family,
these trees produce a lot more than we can use, so it's a good opportunity to share the wealth.
And here in Tulare County, there are many people who are in need. According to the 2010 census, 43% of county residents live in a household that has struggled with food insecurity.
You know, when we have a quarter of our county's population being served by Foodlink, obviously this is a problem when, you know, one in three children are food insecure. Children under the age of 18 aren't food insecure. This is a problem.
And it's that gap between abundance and poverty in the same community that spurred Ramirez to start this program.
This particular project is really thinking about how do we incorporate compassion and how do we incorporate hope and how do we, cultivate a culture of service.
Sandy Beals is the executive director of Foodlink, a Visalia-based nonprofit that provides food to needy families from its warehouse in North Visalia.
It's part of the community involvement model for a community taking care of its own. And we call it waste meets want. So it's food that, you know, might be in excess of what a family needs in their own backyard. But by sharing that, everybody wins.
Every weekend, the fruit that's picked by TC Harvest is delivered to Foodlink. And on the following Monday, residents from throughout the county line up to receive the nutritious food that they otherwise couldn't afford.
When people are going hungry, the food they need the most is the fresh fruit and vegetables. And the reason for that is they're relatively expensive, you know, in the store. And the studies show us that fruit and vegetables are the first thing people cross off their grocery list when their incomes go down. And guess what? That's the food that all of us need to eat more of.
But the recipients aren't the only ones who benefit from the program. Socorro Rios, who helped her longtime friend start the volunteer harvest earlier this year, says it also teaches the group's volunteers a valuable lesson.
I love seeing kids out here working, and I always tell them, just be glad you don't have to do this for a living. You know, my parents did it for a living. Sarah and I have been out working in the fields. It's not the easiest thing. You don't make a lot of money off of it, but somebody's got to do it.
While this year's citrus crop is nearly over, TC Harvest is still active and is searching for residents with backyard stone fruit trees and other crops that would otherwise go to waste. They'd also like to see the program grow with more volunteers and spread to other communities. And as volunteers like Rios will tell you, seeing people benefit from what otherwise would be wasted is a great feeling.
It makes every early morning, every scratch you get on your arm because of the lemons or the oranges, it makes it worthwhile.
For Valley Public Radio News, I'm Joe Moore.
And joining us now to talk more about the program is Sandy Bills. She is with Food Link for Tulare County. Thanks so much for joining us, Sandy.
Hi, my pleasure.
First of all, one of the things that came out in that report is just the need in Tulare County. What kind of strain or impact does that have on Food Link when you have a quarter of the population there depending on Food Link for their food?
Well, it does get scary sometimes. A fourth of the population is a lot of people. Last year, we fed 106,000 people out of a 27,000 square foot warehouse. And FoodLink is a nonprofit food bank, and which means that we are completely dependent on the community for support for the work that we do. And when the economy goes down, you know, people can't afford to donate as much. And so at the same time that we need to be delivering more food, we actually have less support to do it. So that's one of the big problems with the economy. And also, I'm sure you just heard the report on the state budget and the federal budget being cut to bits. And the farm bill is in debate right now, and it looks like both houses are looking at cuts to food stamps, and that terrifies me. People need food stamps.
Well, you know what? I hate to say it, but as well, food stamps, the whole food stamp program is one of the things that's talked about as far as not being that big of a need when it comes to some of the elected officials. And what would you want people to know about that? I mean, when you look at food stamps, I think today, because of the economy, it's not just those we traditionally think of who might need food stamps. You have a lot of other people now having to depend on food stamps.
In the 27 years that I've been doing food bank work, I have never seen so many formerly middle-class people in line to get food. I think it's just a sign of where our economy is going. The rich are getting richer, and the middle class is falling into the more struggling level. I can't tell you how many college graduates that aren't finding jobs, and people who are just on their last rope, trying to make ends meet, and never ever thought they'd be in a food line.
Well, you know, a lot of times we hear about the economy is improving, and it is improving. But, you know, there are still some pockets, and I believe in the Central Valley, we're one of those pockets, where things have not improved that much.
Where we try to focus our activities is in the smaller, rural, unincorporated areas, because hope is very hard to find in those areas. Very little employment, and food is really a desperate need in those areas. So we like to focus the majority of our food in those areas. Certainly don't want to neglect the bigger cities. But
what do you see when you talk about those areas? So what are you talking about? Tell us about that.
Primarily what we're seeing are families, and it's very common for families to move in with each other to save on housing expenses. And it's not unusual at all to find 10, 12 people living in a two-bedroom house together to save expenses. And, you know, of all the issues that that brings up, you know, food shouldn't be one of them. Children need to eat on a regular basis. And that's not happening.
So what is Food Link? What are you doing in the wake of budget cuts, in the wake of the down economy? What are you doing to try to keep the food going out to where it's needed?
Well, this interview on NPR is certainly helping. We need people to be aware of how big this issue actually is and the immediate and long-term consequences of cutting, you know, primarily the food stamp budget. That's absolutely essential. That's a no-brainer. But cutting programs that actually provide basics to human beings, especially children. Children who go hungry now have a very strong trend toward poor brain development, and that stays with them the rest of their life. We can't afford to have a future that looks like that. So those children belong to all of us, and we need to feed them properly.
Okay, how is Tulare County Harvest helping with your goal and what you're trying to do?
I love Tulare County Harvest. It's a fabulous idea. The food is there. It just the problem is the maldistribution. It's in somebody's yard. They're getting all they need, but someone else doesn't have access to it. Well, Tulare County Harvest solves that problem. It's so heartwarming because Food Link especially exists on community involvement activities, and you know, people donate money, and that's good. It's needed, but when they donate their time and their activities and their scratched arms, that's so much more. So it gives people hope that someone cares about them and wants their problems to be solved. It's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling to work with Sarah and, you know, and all of her folks.
When it comes to the whole access of people's backyards, now, I know you're not part of the program, but they do supply you.
Yeah.
Do people, homeowners, just kind of sign up if they want to participate or?
Exactly. It's totally voluntary, and I know we could use more homes with fruit trees, and it doesn't matter what kind of fruit. And people, all fruit is healthy, so people need whatever people have in their backyards. And I know Sarah and Steve, and they're wonderful people, and they will leave the backyard clean and undamaged, believe me. So it's a great program.
But when you think about that, I thought about that. What a great idea.
Yes.
Because we all know people, me included, who have, you know, fruit trees in their backyard, and half the time you don't pick the fruit, and it's just a shame. And now you have this wonderful program. I'm thinking, what a plus if it could be in every county.
I'd love to see that happen. It's a great way, especially I love the interview with the teenagers. I mean, what a wonderful way, you know, to instill charitable giving in people. I mean, it's something that enhances all of our lives. And as, you know, I wish I had done something like that as a teenager. I think it would have made a big difference in my life.
And I think there are a lot of homeowners, the more and more they know about this program, who would love to have somebody come and pick that fruit instead of seeing it go to waste or just fall on the ground.
Well, exactly. And, you know, and that when it falls on the ground, there's all kinds of issues. You know, you get bugs and mosquitoes and whatnot. And it's so much better to have it picked fresh and wonderful and have and see the children eating it.
Now, what kind of impact do you see? You know, there isn't produce or fruit, you know, year-round locally. What happens in the off-season? I mean, do you feel that impact?
To some extent, but I'll tell you what we've done as a food bank is we have formed connections with food banks all over California and even in Arizona. And the growing seasons and the type of produce is different in every area, so we do swaps. So right now we're coming into the tree fruit season, and the farmers and growers will be donating a lot of tree fruit. Well, I share that with other food banks who don't grow that in their area. And then, you know, when it comes, you know, February and March next year, I'm not going to have a whole lot of fresh fruit, but Arizona will. So then they'll share their harvest with us. So it, by doing that, it keeps our costs to a minimum, and it keeps produce coming all year long.
That is a great idea. And I think there's a lot of that anyway with food banks.
Yes.
There's a lot of sharing between not only counties but different states to kind of help year-round. A few other things about FoodLink when it comes to the services you provide. You've talked about the upcoming budget cuts and the impact specifically with the food stamp program. What is that going to mean for you? Like you said, already there are times when many food banks just aren't getting what they, all the supplies that they need, a lot of it having to do with the economy and people who would traditionally donate being out of work themselves. What are you going to do about, do you have any, you know, strategic planning for that, any alternatives in the wake of possible having the food stamp program cut even more?
Well, we're doing the best we can to make sure that our legislators know what the impact of those cuts might be. I mean, we all know there's a deficit and, you know, something's got to go, but that would be very, very foolish cut. Food stamps bring and have a ripple effect on an economy. So, for every dollar's worth of food stamps that comes into Tulare County, that creates $1.84 of economic growth. Because all of those dollars are spent locally in the grocery stores, of course, and so that the grocery stores can hire more people, they can buy more food, and those people can feed their families, and, you know, it goes on. So food stamps is one of those economy builders. So to cut that program, it's like cutting it twice. You don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope that they're hearing you. Sandy, thanks so much for joining us and talking to us more about Tulare County Harvest and also the need for more food and support for FoodLink for Tulare County.
My pleasure. Thank you for approaching the topic.
Thank you. Well, we also have Andy Hausler with the NOSH program for the city of Clovis joining us now about a program that they have. They started it last year at Old Town Clovis, their Friday night's farmer's market. Mr. Hausler, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about this new program. I understand that it's kind of inspired by you buy one and you give one, the model that we've seen successfully for Tom's Shoes.
Yeah. About a year and a half ago, we had gotten together with our food pantries here in Clovis and realized there was a huge need for more food supply for them. As the economy turned, people were in need of food. And we got the group together. There's about five or six pantries. And we sat down with the group that organizes the farmers market boot and came up with the idea for NOSH, where we would market a program that people could donate fruits and vegetables directly to a food pantry that night. And the idea is that they buy one and then that they give one of what they purchase. And it goes directly to a food pantry in Clovis, and that's distributed, you know, within the next few days.
Wow.
To people in need in the city.
What kind of response have you had?
You know, it's been pretty incredible. We get about 1,000 pounds a week of fresh produce, sometimes more than that, depending on, like the earlier caller was saying, on the availability of what produce is available that week, you know, what's coming out of the fields. But at least 1,000 pounds a week, and that's gone a long way to boost our pantries in a significant way.
Now, you heard us talking about Tulare County. We know that Tulare County usually has a higher unemployment rate than Fresno County and some very other challenging statistics. But you talked about the city of Clovis and what you're seeing with the food pantries. Is that something you're seeing as well when it comes to just the need?
Yes. We had done a needs assessment on needs in the community of Clovis about a year and a half ago, and in talking with the pantries, they had seen about a 400% increase in demand for food.
Wow. Is that over?
Which was significant.
It is.
The city wasn't in a position to be able to help out significantly financially, so we decided to get together as a community group and figure out ways that we could take advantage of the community to care for itself and to care for its people. And it's been a success. Out of this, we have also started a backyard gleaning program
as well.
That has been successful. And we actually started it in the winter, and people have lots of citrus here in the valley. And we've connected volunteers with homeowners and a pantry, and it's gone very well.
Now, how long have you said you've been doing that?
It was a year ago last December, so a year and a half ago.
So, in a way, Clovis, you have sort of the same model. You're doing the same thing as far as picking the fruit from homeowners' backyards that otherwise would go to waste.
Yes.
Now, how did you get the homeowners involved? How did you go about doing that?
We marketed in several city marketing materials. We had a newsletter that had gone out. We also marketed through the pantries and the volunteers that they utilize, as well as the churches that they're connected to, and just word of mouth. So, and then we also connected to our Clovis Unified School District to utilize students and market it through the school district to see if there was anyone that was interested. And we've had great success, especially on the citrus side, and we'll see how it goes this summer. This will be our first summer looking for stone fruits and whatever is in people's backyards.
And so you have a group of volunteers who do that?
Yeah, we try to match up a home with a pantry that has distribution coming up soon. And then we also try, if they need more volunteers, we'll work with other community groups to get those.
Wow, that's great. And you mentioned again about how many homes do you have already signed up?
I think we've done about 20 homes over the last year, and a lot of these homes are on ranchettes, like an acre in size or so, and they have a sizable orchard in the back of some type, whether it's citrus or stone fruits.
So now what you need is just all of us homeowners who have two or three fruit trees in the backyard to kind of sign up.
Some churches that are using their congregations to do that, and we could always take more.
That's great. If people want to get involved, what can they do?
Well, they can come out to the Clovis Farmers Market and buy some fruits and vegetables for themselves, as well as donate. We have a booth set up right next to the business organization of Old Town booth in front of the Educational Employees Credit Union. We have a couple of shopping carts and some signage in the pantry that's participating that night, markets themselves as well as to availability of distribution and what they're all about. There's some shopping carts there you can donate to. If you have fruit in your backyard, you can get a hold of City Clovis and ask for myself or Lauren Tello, and we'll get you set up to have someone come out and pick.
What a great program and a great idea. When it comes to you mentioned your program, the NOSH program. Does that stand for anything?
No, it was developed by the business organization of Old Town to a reference to noshing, which is a word
right.
to describe
when you're noshing your food.
Noshing your food. Yeah.
Yes, but one other thing, the city of Clovis, the farmers market that they have in Old Town has become a place to be during the summer. So many people enjoy it. And to get the community involved, people who love the Clovis Farmers Market, but to get them involved in this whole buy one, give one, what an absolutely wonderful program and a wonderful way for the whole community, not just Clovis, because so many people from outside of Clovis go to the Farmers Market to participate and to get involved.
Yeah, the community definitely comes out to the farmers market, and we are excited to take advantage of the community, and the care that they've given to the community through that has been incredible. And the support of the farmers, the farmers keep coming back if we buy their fruits and vegetables, and it's a sustainable way of supplying food to the people in need in Clovis, and I'll have to say the farmers have been incredible too. At the end of the night, much of the time, they donate a large amount of fruits and vegetables to the pantry.
Okay, and that sounds good. Thanks so much. This is Andy Hausler with the NOSH program for the city of Clovis, just another community finding a way to help its own. So we appreciate your time, Andy.
Thank you.
I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. We'll be right back.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno and Cahuilla Delta Medical Center.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. California's budget problems have put a strain on all state departments, including local county courts. In this special report, Valley Public Radio's Gabriela Ornelas tells us how Fresno County residents may find getting to a courtroom much more difficult in the coming weeks.
Fresno County covers nearly 6,000 square miles, from the mountains of the High Sierra to the rolling hills around Kalinga. For years, residents in the small rural communities of the county have come to rely on local branches of the Fresno County Superior Court to handle everything from traffic tickets to small trials. But a few weeks ago, the court announced it will close all 7 branch courts that are outside of the city of Fresno, thanks to steep budget cuts from the state. The move has both residents and judges like Gary Hoff concerned.
We never wanted to leave those communities. We didn't plan on leaving those communities. We know our presence in the communities helps businesses there, helps people to accommodate their contacts with the court in a more timely and cost-efficient way for them. Unfortunately, we just don't have the resources to do that anymore.
The Fresno Superior Court must absorb more than $26 million in cuts in the upcoming fiscal year, which begins July 1st. Consolidating operations of the branch courts is estimated to save around $480,000, while also saving the state more than $400,000 in state facility funding and $1 million in security funds. Residents in communities like Kalinga, Firebaugh, Reedley, Sanger, Selma, Clovis, and Keensburg will have to make the drive to downtown Fresno once their local courthouses have closed. As city manager of Kalinga, Daryl Pyle, explains, the consolidation will become a hassle, more than an efficient cost-saving measure.
After time passes and they evaluate the impacts of closing the courts, they will not have saved as much money as they anticipated, and they will create more problems than they solved. Demands on public transportation are going to increase, and caseloads are going to pile up on those judges' desks, and they're going to have to come up with a new solution to solve those problems.
For Kalinga residents, that means an hour and a half drive to the county courthouse in downtown Fresno, both ways. Even county supervisors are upset over the closure. The board voted last week to send a letter of protest to the court over the matter. Supervisor Judy Case, who represents communities from Reedley to Kalinga, says the issue is of great concern to her district.
While it may seem efficient to close courts if you live in Fresno, for those living in the outlying areas, it's going to hurt our most vulnerable who were not able to get to the court system. For one, the public transportation system is not really geared to get people to court and get them back if you have to travel for 2 hours across the county.
However, court officials say that residents will have other options. People have been able to pay for traffic tickets online and contest traffic citations by mail for some time now. But Judge Hoff says the court system is looking for more ways to use technology to save money and provide convenience for residents in rural communities who will be hurt most by the consolidation.
Right now, we're looking at ways of using technology such as maybe video or conference trials in traffic. We would have to get probably a grant. First, we'd have to get legal approval to do it, but we would also have to have money to have a system set up.
While the increased use of technology could be helpful to citizens, Kalinga Mayor Ron Ramsey doesn't believe it's a solution to the problems the consolidation will bring to city residents.
I think they should have done that before they start closing everything. I think you should have a plan intact before you actually cut something, before you know what's happening, because you don't know what the cuts are going to do to you.
Judge Hoff says while it might be possible to reopen the branch courts if the financial situation were to change in the future, the present budget crisis makes it unlikely. Even with a consolidation, the Fresno Superior Court will still face a $5.4 million budget shortfall.
As for now, I don't see the budget picture changing to the point where that's likely. We're looking at this year's budget picture, which is drastic, and I anticipate that next year is going to be worse.
Financial pressures are facing not only the Fresno Superior Court, but are typical of the court systems in all California counties. As funding comes out of the state budget, the financial crisis is out of the court's control, and they will continue to be subject to budget pressures from Sacramento. Judge Hoff says that the issues with funding are affecting the operations of the judicial branch, which he fears will lead the public to lose faith in their system. But he doesn't see the situation changing anytime soon.
Hopefully our justice partners are on board with us and will be able to staff the courts the way we are reconfiguring them. We think they are. And we'll just see how we're able to operate. And we may have to make further changes, but I don't think this is the last of the cuts.
The Coalinga Courthouse is scheduled to close July 30th, along with courthouses in Firebaugh, Reedley, Sanger, and Selma. The courthouses in Clovis and Kingsburg will close August 6th. With Valley Public Radio News, I'm Gabrielle Ornelas.
And welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson. Joining us now to further discuss this issue is Renee Turner Sample. She is an attorney with Cornwell and Sample Attorneys at Law. She is also a professor at San Joaquin College of Law and president of Central California Trial Lawyers Association. Thank you so much, Ms. Sample, for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Juanita, and thank you very much for doing a program on this issue.
Do you think people have any idea what kind of impact this is going to have?
No, I think that people don't fully understand the importance of the court system until they need it.
Right.
They may
be thinking when you look at the seven courthouses closing outside of the city of Fresno that it's not going to have that big of an impact, or it won't impact people downtown Fresno County.
That's right. If you're in those outlying areas, I think they know the impact. But if you're in Fresno, you think, well, I use the Fresno courthouse. But those people in the outlying areas will all come into the Fresno courthouse. And the backlog is already unimaginable in Fresno.
It's already bad.
It is already bad. But people don't see that until they need it.
Now, I understand that a group of you were in Sacramento trying to get lawmakers' attention when it comes to this, to let them know what kind of impact this is going to have.
Yes, there was about 400 plaintiffs' lawyers, and we're the lawyers that represent the people that have been injured and suffered losses. And so it's our organization that tries to speak on behalf of the consumers. And so it was on Justice Day. And we all went up to Sacramento and we pled the case of the courts. And I will say that everyone was sympathetic, but the best they hoped for was no further cuts. But even that's unlikely.
But, well, you know, when you look at how much the state is really saving on this, if I can get the figures right and recall, it was $400,000 in state facility funding and maybe $1 million in security funds. That doesn't sound like a lot of money when you come to a total budget.
It doesn't. When there are so few areas that don't have mandated amounts that require to be funded, they start cutting where they can, it's unusual that this is, you know, a branch of the government that they actually take away. And this is the branch of the government that is supposed to be accessible to the public. And they're taking away that access.
They're not only closing those courthouses, but when people talk about whether or not there are going to be other ramifications or impacts, I understand the employees are having to take a 10% pay cut.
Yes, they are.
And that's all employees, Fresno County Superior Court employees?
Yes, and what this means is that the courts are already – they have such a huge caseload. And what they're doing now is they're bringing more work in, giving their workers less pay and require them to do more in the hours that they're there. thankfully, in Fresno, I think we are really blessed with particularly our judges and our DAs and our public defenders that are there for heart rather than money. But it's an unbelievable burden on the system, the interpreters, the court staff. The paperwork is...
Well, you know, the DA's office, they've already struggled with budget cuts, and that's from the county. We don't want to get this confused for people to understand that Fresno Superior Court is, even though it says Fresno County Superior Court, it is a state-funded agency.
That's correct.
Okay. And it's my understanding, even after the cuts, there's still going to be a huge deficit. So it's just to take out this $1 million or to make these cuts and to close 7 courthouses to save $1 million, when in the end you're still going to have this massive deficit.
And I think that everybody agrees you're going to have to eventually restore court services to those areas, because there will be so many people that don't have access to the court, you know, domestic violence, people with smaller claims that can't hire lawyers.
So, and we're getting into that now. What kinds of trials? I think people need to know this. What kinds of trials will be affected by the cuts to the local courts?
Well, what the local courts handle are the smaller cases, the small claims, which are such an important part of our business community. You don't get $500 back on deposit from your landlord. I mean, that's where all those disputes are resolved. And if you don't have access to that, people just give up and they've been wronged and they don't have an avenue to fix it. Domestic violence, child custody, those are the kind of issues that are resolved in these outlying courts. And when people come to me as a lawyer, they have no emotional energy left. That's why you seek a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are in these smaller cases, they can't afford a lawyer, their case isn't big enough for a lawyer, and they don't have the emotional energy either. And now to drive into Fresno, they're going to give up.
Yeah. And when you talk about, these not really being huge cases, you know, as you mentioned, for somebody who has been wronged, If somebody didn't pay them and they've been trying to collect and they're really depending on that money for their livelihood and they have no recourse. When it comes to child custody cases, number one, they're already very draining. And you're talking about having kids kind of left in limbo. It is still a huge deal.
It is. It's tremendous. There are so many that when we were talking at Lobby Day, we're talking particularly there's so many unmarried couples right now that have children. Well, the father doesn't have access to make the mother allow him to see his child unless he goes to the court. And these young fathers, it's a very easy process to do it. If they have to drive all the way into Fresno and go back to court the 3 or 4 times that are required, it's not going to happen. I mean, that's... Our whole system is designed that you get justice in the community in which you live. And what we're doing is we're taking justice out of those communities and putting it into Fresno, where the smaller cases are considered low on the totem pole and they don't get treatment.
Well, you know, there is a saying that justice delayed is justice denied. Is that the case that we see here?
It has always been the case because, again, it's that emotional energy. If you have a lawyer... Okay, you're going to get your justice eventually. So many cases do not require a lawyer. And if you're not, if this isn't what you do for a living, if it's going to take you 2 years, you're not going to do it. And then who's wronged you is going to get away with it, and who's wronged you is going to keep doing it, knowing
exactly.
in this community, I get a free pass because no one comes after me.
Right. And I think that's also the feeling, and we've also seen on the criminal side because of, overcrowding. A lot of low-level criminals have been released. And, police have said that's the same attitude they have adopted. And that is, well, here, in Fresno County, I don't have to worry. Nobody, they don't have the manpower to come after me. I mean, what are we saying when that happens? Not only, let's say, with the criminals, but also in a situation where you have somebody who's been wronged and they just keep doing it to people because they feel like, hey, I can get away with this.
And that is what happens. You know, notice how nobody in Fresno cared that much about the cuts until they had their car stolen.
Exactly.
It's the same way that's going to happen in these outlying areas. Nobody's going to care that much until their auto shop starts, you know, cheating them. Their landlords start keeping their deposit knowing no one can come after them. I mean, we eventually will have to restore justice. And it's going to cost more then than it would be now. But and then the politicians are being short-sighted here. I'm not sure I know the answer to the budget, but...
But when you say they're going to eventually have to restore these, what are you trying to say there?
Well, I mean, eventually these courts are going to be back up and running. I mean, there's you cannot deny justice to these outlying areas. And so we know it's going to eventually come back, but that's just going to be on another set of politician shoulders. I mean, it's just what happens in businesses all the time, that someone's going to make budget cuts to save. Well, it's because someone 10 years from now is going to have to restore it.
Right. And it's going to cost more then.
It's going to cost more. And our communities are going to suffer greatly in the meantime. And domestic violence, I mean, for the cases where someone is seriously injured and put in a hospital, the police will step in. But for those other families where it's verbal abuse and
they're just being harassed and it just continues.
There's nothing there. Those families are not going to drive into Fresno and go wait in what will now be a full day of line to be able to go up and talk to an overburdened clerk to get the help.
Right. Do these cuts make, because we already have a tough situation in the courts, do they make a bad situation even worse? As far as what were you saying and what was the situation like, you know, before the cuts?
There's been a 30% cut since 2008. And I think the Fresno courts have done better than some of the larger cities in trying to adapt. But I think that's mostly because we have such good people in those positions, lawyers that gave up successful careers to become servants of the community. And so I know that that has made a difference, but there's nothing left to cut. And the delay is really something that you just cannot imagine until you've been in the system. It often takes, you know, four to 5 years before you're getting any sort of justice. And we were talking about this before we went on air. You take someone who's been off work for a year because of an injury, if they don't get their justice for 4 or 5 years, the financial hole. The family's devastated. They lost their house.
They would have ruined their lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way they would be able to recoup financially. When you lose that much and you get that far down, coming back is very, very difficult.
A client who had a $500,000 claim, someone stole it from her. It took so long to get to court. She needed it to provide treatment for her autistic son. 5 years later, those treatment options are gone.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the money's there now, but 5 years, you can't get that back.
You know, in light of what you're saying, because people will say, well, you know, fireball, calling, if you got to go to court, it's not, you know, to drive in, you know, 1 or 2 days isn't bad. But as you've mentioned, this means that do you really think those people will have adequate access to the courts?
No,
under a situation like this.
I don't, because when people are seeking lawyers or seeking help from the court, it's because they've tried everything else and they don't have any other recourse and they're at their wit's end. And then so to take that and to say, and now you've, it's not only driving to Fresno, it's driving to Fresno and now waiting in lines that are twice as long.
Exactly.
I mean, if you
know, nobody likes going to the county courthouse anyway. It's already difficult.
$500, if that's what you're out, which makes a difference between meeting your bills and not, to have to say, I'm going to have to take off work, I'm going to have to drive to Fresno, the gas money, drive to Fresno, park in downtown, and now I'm going to wait in line all day, and the chances are I'll probably have to come back
right.
the next
you
day.
You still won't get your case, or you still won't get the situation resolved. You know, we heard it in the report. You know, what about technology? Can it provide a solution to some of this?
I believe that it will be there. That will take the legislature to sort of allow us to do more remote. We're doing depositions now by Skype. And I think it's going to take business travel and make it almost obsolete. And I do think that that could someday be an answer.
When you were saying the legislature is allowing you, is that something that they have that they had to approve?
Right. Our technology hasn't made it to the law that you're allowed to have trial by Skype, you know, have justice by Skype. But I do think we can get there.
Okay. That's good to know. There is something. But, you know, still, when you talk about a lot of people in these outlying communities, I mean, the statistics also show those are the places with the least internet access as well.
Well, I think you're still going to have the courthouse there.
Okay. You know, so people could go to the courthouse.
Go to the courthouse and maybe have the judges off site. But right now, we don't have the budget for the judges. So it's not.
What about the other staff?
We don't have the – I mean, that's when they're cutting down the staff, they don't even have the people. The people they have, they can only serve so many people a day, and they're at maximum capacity. So Skype might save travel time, but at the same time, we have to have the manpower there to hear the cases.
What do you think I think they're in the process of making these cuts final or not. When will we start to feel the impacts of these cuts?
You know, my best estimate is probably based on what you were just talking about with the car thefts. I think we'll start feeling it in about a year. The people that it happens to one by one will feel it immediately. But within a year, we'll all start knowing someone that had justice denied.
Hmm. What are your colleagues saying about these cuts?
It is really hard because I'm the president of the Plaintiffs Trial Lawyers Association, and we're the ones that are representing the consumers. But what we're trying to do is open our doors and handle more cases on a pro bono basis, because if someone can have a lawyer, then the lawyer can do the traveling. And that's right now, as far as as colleagues, that's all we can think of to offer. We have offered, we pay higher fees, and we've gone to the courts and said we'll pay higher fees for filing fees and when we do motions, so that the lawyers, when we're in the courts, we're paying more for our cases than somebody that's going in without a lawyer, so they don't have to pay as high a fees. But again, these are just pennies in the bucket.
You know, some people say mediation outside the courtroom could be a solution. What do you think about that?
Absolutely not. Okay, this is the arbitration is what is being sold to our communities as an answer. Arbitration is more expensive. It costs to have an arbitrator is $500 to $2,000 an hour.
Wow.
So when you sign on a credit card and you agree to go to arbitration, you need to be aware what happens is then the arbitrator, who's beholden to the insurance company or the credit card company, they're the ones that are deciding your case. And in order to have your case heard, you're going to have to pay your part of those fees. So what is that again? Justice denied.
And so when you say you're going to have to pay a part of those fees, you not only have the fees, but you would probably have to hire an attorney as well.
Oh, yes. If your case is small enough, you might want to try to handle it on your own. If you were in small claims court, they couldn't have an attorney, and the access to the courts is free. In arbitration, you're having to pay to have a court. The studies are not disputed. Arbitration is business friendly only. And that's why it's supported so heavily by the Chamber of Commerce. It's a way to make sure that consumers don't even have an avenue to redress the wrongs.
Wow. So you think, how were you all met by legislators when you did go?
You know what? We were met very sympathetically. I don't think there was anyone who's talked to someone about the court system for more than 5 minutes that doesn't fully believe that the courts are underfunded and that it's denying justice. I think that the members of the legislature are just saying, well, someone's got to not get the services. And I think it's because those are so few people that someone's got to have the cuts, and that's who's getting it.
Do you know how many people might be impacted when we talk about closing those seven courthouses outside of The city of Fresno.
Are you talking about employees?
Not just employees, but, you know, potentially residents as well. Has anybody kind of looked at that?
I don't think they've looked at the number because it's not – I mean, you might talk about one person at a time, but it's our entire community that's impacted because the larger cases, they don't get justice. They get justice delayed. The smaller cases, the fraud that starts running rampant because they're not going to be followed up. I mean, it will affect everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Renee Turner-Sample, Professor, San Joaquin College of Law, thank you so much for coming in and just shedding more light on this situation that is facing Fresno County. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. Well, this summer in Fresno's Woodward Park, Valley residents can enjoy the sights and sounds of live theater thanks to the Woodward Shakespeare Company, now in its 8th season. Believe it or not, the company features many of the Valley's top actors, and this year will feature 2 Shakespeare plays as well as a stage classic from the 20th century by Tennessee Williams. Joining us now on Valley Edition, executive producer of the company, Greg Tabor. Thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much for having us.
So we can say it's that time again, right?
It is that time again, yes. Eight years and running.
I can't believe it's been 8 years. Doesn't seem like it. But that's what happens when you're having fun, right?
Absolutely. I was just talking to a couple of the people who were there the first year. The other night, and it was one of those, oh, yeah, we have been doing this for 8 years, haven't we, moments, and it was wonderful.
How has it changed over the years, you think?
Major change was the venue. We began in the amphitheater for the first couple of seasons, and then we moved over to the recreation area, and then 2 years ago, we moved into the what we're now calling the Meadow Theater, the area that we're in now, northeast corner of the park, where the city, Parks Recreation, was very kind to give us a 25-year lease on that piece of property to develop it.
It's a nice spot, too.
It's a wonderful spot. The sun goes down in the evening. Everyone thinks it's so hot out there. And, you know, it's Fresno. Of course, it's hot. But in the evening, the sun goes down. There's a breeze that comes up out of the little river valley there, and it is very nice.
Right. A nice very setting. Nice. I've heard it from so many people. Okay, tell us about the season coming up.
This year, we are running Shakespeare's Merry Wives of Windsor. We started that 2 weeks ago. We finished that up this weekend, this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's a comedy featuring one of Shakespeare's favorite characters from his era, John Falstaff. The story is that Queen Elizabeth actually commissioned this play. Essentially, she wanted a story about Falstaff. So Shakespeare wrote this, and he's a bit of a bumbler and gets into some shenanigans with a couple of married ladies trying to woo them out of their money. And the tables get turned on him, and we have the young lovers and jealous husbands. It's a lot of fun. And then we'll take about a week and a half off. We'll come back with Tennessee Williams, A Streetcar Named Desire.
Now, that's not necessarily Shakespeare, but it's such a classic.
Absolutely. We started that last year. We added in a third play focusing on primarily American classics. We did All My Sons by Arthur Miller. And this year we decided to go with Tennessee Williams.
And this is going to be through the entire month of July.
Yeah, it runs July 12th through the 28th. Again, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 8 o'clock. And it's going to be a pretty powerful piece.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's one people are really going to want to come out and see. And then your season finale?
Our season finale will be Henry V. Great story of valor and brotherhood in war, and a young king who has to grow up and learn what it means to lead a country, and all of the people that follow him through that journey. It promises to be a very strong ending to a very good season.
What does this mean? Because when you take a look at the productions you're putting on, for local actors, I would assume this is just gives them a wonderful opportunity, not only for them and their craft, but for people here to come out and see.
That is absolutely our hope. We're the fifth largest city in the state, and our board is committed to the idea that as the fifth largest city in the state, we need a Shakespeare Festival. We need something that brings this to the community a community that may or may not get an opportunity to see it. You know, our local theaters do wonderful things, but there's not a lot of Shakespeare that goes on. And it has been around for over 400 years. It's been around that long because it's that good. It speaks to everyone. It speaks to everyone's lives. So we are very committed to bringing that to the community. And, of course, to the actors. Again, it's the gold standard for an actor. You know, doing Shakespeare is the best material you can do. So we provide that opportunity.
And I'm sure people are going to want to know, but this one is coming up. Who are your main actors in Streetcar Named Desire?
Streetcar Named Desire. Let's see. Blanche is Gabriella Lawson, who just directed Merry Wives of Windsor. Stella is one of our local talents, Erin Baird, who was in last year's Comedy of Errors. And Mitch is Michael Peterson, who has been with us from the beginning of WSF and is in Merry Wives of Windsor as well. And Eric Oram is taking on the role of Stanley. He debuted with WSF a couple of seasons ago in King Lear, and he's done a number of things at Second Space. He was in The Crucible down there not too long ago. And those are the four big ones, and they're going to be bringing on some major performances.
Wow. Look like this is going to be a must-see. Now, after your eighth season, are you all getting the support that you need to really keep this going?
Well, as you know, support is always an issue.
I just thought I'd give you a little time to talk about that, just to remind people, that for people to be able to do what you do or any of the kind of events we have like this in Fresno, we need to support it. You have to support it if you want it to keep going.
Absolutely. There are roughly 50 Shakespeare festivals in the state of California. And over half of them charge admission, anywhere from $10 a ticket to $60 a ticket. The average ticket price is $27 per ticket per show. We do not charge anything from day one. And a number of people have said, you've got a great thing. You should be charging for this. And our board has been steadfast in no, we provide this for free. This is our gift to the community. Now, of course, on the other side of that, that means we need community support to keep doing it. We have patrons who give every year, who help us out. But the majority of our operating budget for the season is donations from those who come to see our shows. And they are very generous and have been very generous and can always be more generous.
But much appreciated.
Much appreciated. Oh, yes. Very much appreciated.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Greg Tabor, executive producer of the company, and another great season in store for people here in Fresno County.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. I am Juanita Stevenson, and for all of us here at Valley Public Radio and Valley Edition, we'd like to thank you for joining us this morning. Be sure to tune in this evening for the rebroadcast of Valley Edition, and you can also join us online at kbpr.org. You have a great rest of the day.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.